It's Rihanna. Can I come visit your house, please?
Hey.
Hello, and welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Ana Mateo. This program is for English learners, so we speak a bit slower. Also, we write our stories with English learners in mind. Here are the stories we have for you on today's program. First, we bring you the education report. Today, Dan Friedel talks about an educational company that makes online classes. Jonathan Evans will tell us about a very special hotel. I will return with this week's words and their stories. Today, I will talk about some green expressions. We will end our 30 minutes together with The Making of a Nation, our ongoing U.S. history program. But first, here is Dan Friedel.
If you are like over 70 million other people around the world, you may have taken a class with Coursera. Coursera is an online education company that helps create massive open online courses, or MOOCs. Andrew Ng and Daphne Koller are computer science professors at Stanford University. They started Coursera in 2012. The company gives professors and universities a way to make a version of their classes available to students all over the world. With the system from Coursera, a professor from Duke University in North Carolina can reach a student in Korea or a woman from Brazil. The company says it works with over 200 universities, from the small Curtis Institute of Music in Philadelphia to the large Peking University in Beijing, China, with its 3,000 professors. There are now over 6,600 courses listed for anyone who wants to learn a new skill or prepare for a new job. Coursera is the largest online education company of this kind. While Coursera says it has 77 million people registered for its website around the world, it is not clear how many of those have actually taken a class. People who support online education say it opens up classrooms to everyone. They say it costs less than a class in person. Critics say many people who start online classes never finish. They are not as invested in finishing a free or less costly course. In the past, people took classes on Coursera to satisfy an interest in learning about a subject. Now, more students have taken classes for certificates that are accepted by many organizations. Some Coursera courses now count toward college degrees, and degree programs can cost up to $45,000. In the last 12 months, many people were not able to go to class in person because of the COVID-19 pandemic. So they turned to Coursera as a way to continue their studies. Coursera launched Coursera for Campus to help schools offer courses to stuck-at-home students. By the end of 2020, over 130 colleges and universities paid Coursera to use Coursera for Campus to teach online. Some high school students in the U.S. also took classes with Coursera because after-school activities were canceled. In 2020, Coursera took in 59% more money than in 2019. Its revenue was almost $300 million. It also spent a lot of money to expand, so it lost almost $70 million last year. However, Coursera and other online education companies think the business is expanding. For example, some people who lost jobs during the pandemic are now learning new skills online. Since 2012, Coursera has been supported by private investment companies. As interest in online learning grew, the Silicon Valley-based company filed for a stock market listing in early March to look for new investors. Carla Hickman studies online education for a company called EAB. She said the investment will help Coursera as it grows.
I do think some of this initial capital is just going to make sure Coursera can continue to deliver the product they are today at a high standard as they grow.
As the company grows, Hickman said, it is becoming less open and massive as you have to pay money to access the content. I'm Dan Friedel.
Now, here is Jonathan Evans.
A hotel that calls itself the world's first polar bear hotel has opened in northeastern China. The Polar Bear Hotel is part of the Harbin Polar Land Amusement Park in Harbin, the capital and largest city in Heilongjiang Province. It opened earlier this month and promised that guests would be able to see live polar bears from all 21 guest rooms. Whether you're eating, playing, or sleeping, polar bears will keep you company, Harbin Polar Land said in a statement on the WeChat messenger service. Photos and videos from Chinese state media showed people watching two polar bears in a closed indoor space with artificial ice and small pools of water. Yang Liu is a spokeswoman for Harbin Polar Land. She told Reuters that the indoor area is only part of the bears' total living space. She said they are also let outdoors when temperature and air quality permit. Liu added there has been very high interest in staying at the hotel, where rooms cost from about $290 to $351 a night. But some animal rights activists have criticized the hotel. Jason Baker is vice president at animal rights group PETA. He told Reuters, polar bears belong in the Arctic, not in zoos or glass boxes in aquariums, and certainly not in hotels. He added, polar bears are active for up to 18 hours a day in nature, roaming home ranges that can span thousands of miles, where they enjoy a real life. In 2016, a shopping center in the southern city of Guangzhou drew worldwide criticism after videos showed a polar bear named Pizza lying on her side in a glass-walled area. Harbin Polar Land was established in 2005. It calls itself the world's first polar performing arts amusement park. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And now, words and their stories from VOA Learning English. Colors are often connected to the feelings we have. Many expressions in English link colors and emotions. Take, for example, the color green. Green can be a symbol for many things. In other words, it can represent many different ideas, qualities, or objects in our lives. One of these is money. For example, a greenback is a common expression for a dollar bill because it is green. Here is another example. Green represents environmental causes. So if a company goes green, they probably have changed to cleaner technology to produce their products. Green is also a sign of a beginner. If someone is green to a job or activity, they are new to it. So, for example, if I am green at cooking, I haven't been cooking for very long. So I'm probably not very good at it. Just ask my family. Green can also mean other things, bad things. Historians say, long ago, the Greeks connected a green color on the face with sickness. They might have thought the color came from an overproduction of bile in the body. Now we say that if someone looks green around the gills, they look sick, or they could be sick at any moment. Gills of a fish are the organs it uses to breathe, instead of lungs. In this expression, why we say gills is not exactly clear, but maybe it is used as a funny replacement for the word mouth. For example, if your friend drinks too much alcohol at a party or eats too many sweet foods and does not feel well, you might say he looks green around the gills. People who get seasick might look green around the gills when they are sailing on rough waters in a boat. The Greeks also linked green to jealousy. Today we use green to describe people who are very jealous or envious. One of the expressions is very simple. We say they are green with envy. Let's say I really want something that you have, like a beautiful apartment. You could say that I am green with envy about your apartment. Envy usually has two parts. You feel unhappy over another person's luck, but you also want to have the same luck for yourself. It does not feel good to be green with envy. In fact, feeling envious or jealous is unpleasant. But these feelings are natural. We all probably have felt these emotions at some point in our lives. But some people get so jealous of others that it begins to affect their lives. In that case, we can say they are consumed with envy, or eaten up by jealousy. We can also say the green-eyed monster has a hold of them. The green-eyed monster is jealousy, imagined as a beast that attacks people. It takes over their minds and tries to destroy their lives. If someone happens to speak English a little better than you, don't turn green with envy. Just listen to more programs at VOA Learning English. That will help you a lot more than giving in to the green-eyed monster. And that's all the time we have for this Words and Their Stories. Until next time, I'm Ana Mateo.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. I'm Steve Ember. Today we tell about the movement for civil rights for Black Americans. The day is August 28, 1963. More than 250,000 people are gathered in Washington. Black and white, young and old, they demand equal treatment for Black Americans. The nation's most famous civil rights leader, the Reverend Martin Luther King Jr., is speaking.
I am happy to join with you today in what will go down in history as the greatest demonstration for freedom in the history of our nation.
Early in its history, Black Africans were brought to America as slaves. They were bought and sold like animals. By the time of America's Civil War in the 1860s, many had been freed by their owners. Many, however, still worked as slaves on the plantations or large farms of the South. By the end of the war, slavery had been declared unconstitutional. But that was only the first step in the struggle for equality. Most people of color could not get good jobs. They could not get good housing. They had far less chance of a good education than white Americans. For about 100 years, blacks made slow gains. Widespread activism for civil rights did not really begin until after World War II. During the war, black Americans earned respect as members of the armed forces. When they came home, many demanded that their civil rights be respected too. An organization, the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, led the way. In 1951, the organization sent its lawyers to help a man in the city of Topeka, Kansas. The man, Oliver Brown, and 12 others had brought legal action against the city. They wanted to end racial separation in their children's schools. That policy was known as segregation. At that time, 2 of every 5 public schools in America had all-white students or all-black students. The law said all public schools must be equal, but they were not. Schools for white children were almost always better than schools for black children. The situation was worst in southern states. The case against the city of Topeka, Brown versus the Board of Education, was finally settled by the nation's highest court. In 1954, the Supreme Court ruled that separate schools for black children were not equal to schools for white children. The next year, It said public schools must accept children of all races as quickly as possible. In September 1957, a black girl attempted to enter an all-white school in the city of Little Rock, Arkansas. An angry crowd shouted at her. State guards blocked her way. The guards had been sent by the state governor, Orville Faubus. After 3 weeks, a federal court ordered Governor Faubus to remove the guards. The girl, Elizabeth Eckford, and other black students were able to enter the school. After 1 day, however, riots forced the black students to leave. President Dwight Eisenhower ordered federal troops to Little Rock. They helped black students get into the white school safely. However, angry white citizens closed all the city's public schools. The schools stayed closed for 2 years. In 1962, a black student named James Meredith sought to attend the University of Mississippi. School officials refused. John F. Kennedy, the president at that time, sent federal law officers to help him. James Meredith became the first black person to graduate from the University of Mississippi. In addition to fighting for equal treatment in education, black Americans fought for equal treatment in housing and transportation. In many cities of the South, blacks were forced to sit in the back of buses. In 1955, a black woman named Rosa Parks got on a bus in the city of Montgomery, Alabama. She sat in the back. The bus became crowded. There were no more seats for white people. So the bus driver ordered Mrs. Parks to stand and give her seat to a white person. She refused. Her feet were tired after a long day at work. Rosa Parks was arrested.
For a number of years, the Negro passengers on the city bus lines of Montgomery have been humiliated, intimidated, and faced threats on this bus line.
The Reverend Martin Luther King organized the black citizens of Montgomery. They were the major users of the bus system. They decided to stop using the buses.
At present, we are in the midst of a protest, the Negro citizens of Montgomery, representing some 44% of the population. 90% at least of the regular Negro bus passengers are staying off the buses, and we plan to continue until something is done.
The boycott lasted a little more than a year. It seriously affected the earnings of the bus company. In the end, racial separation on the buses in Montgomery was declared illegal. Rosa Parks' tired feet had helped win black Americans another victory in their struggle for equal rights. And the victory had been won without violence. The Reverend King was following the teachings of former Indian leader Mohandas Gandhi. Gandhi urged his followers to reach their political goals without violence. One of the major tools of nonviolence in the civil rights struggle in America was the sit-in. In a sit-in, protesters entered a store or public eating place. They quietly asked to be served. Sometimes they were arrested. Sometimes they remained until the business closed, but they were not served. Some went hours without food or water.
Buses are a-coming. Oh, yeah.
Another kind of protest was the Freedom Ride. This involved buses that traveled through states from the north to the south. On Freedom Rides, blacks and whites sat together to make it difficult for officials to enforce racial separation laws on the buses. Many Freedom Rides and much violence took place in the summer of 1964. Sometimes the Freedom Riders were arrested. Sometimes angry crowds of whites beat the Freedom Riders. Perhaps the most dangerous part of the civil rights movement was the campaign to win voting rights for black Americans. The 15th Amendment to the Constitution said a citizen could not be denied the right to vote because of race or color. Several southern states, however, passed laws to try to deny voting rights to blacks for other reasons. Martin Luther King and his supporters demanded new legislation to guarantee the right to vote. They held protests in the state of Alabama. In the city of Birmingham, the chief law officer ordered his men to fight the protesters with high-pressure water hoses and fierce dogs. People throughout the country watched the demonstration on television. The sight of people, including children, being beaten by policemen and bitten by dogs, awakened many citizens to the civil rights struggle. Federal negotiators reached a compromise. The compromise was, in fact, a victory for the protesters. They promised to stop their demonstrations. In exchange, they would be permitted to vote.
The freedom train is coming. Can't you hear that whistle blowing? It's time to get your tickets on and get on board.
President Lyndon Johnson signed a major civil rights bill in 1964. Yet, violence continued in some places. Three civil rights workers were murdered in Mississippi. One was murdered in Alabama. Martin Luther King kept working toward the goal of equal rights. On April 4, 1968, he died working toward that goal. King was shot to death in Memphis, Tennessee. He had gone there to support a strike by waste collection workers.
Dr. King was standing on the balcony of a second-floor hotel room tonight when, according to a companion, a shot was fired from across the street. In the friend's words, the bullet exploded in his face.
CBS newsman Walter Cronkite.
Police, who have been keeping a close watch over the Nobel Peace Prize winner because of Memphis' turbulent racial situation, were on the scene almost immediately. They rushed the 39-year-old Negro leader to a hospital where he died of a bullet wound in the neck.
A white man, James Earl Ray, was tried and found guilty of the crime. A wave of unrest followed the murder of Martin Luther King Jr. Blacks in more than 100 cities in America rioted. In some cities, areas affected by the riots were not rebuilt for many years. The movement for civil rights for black Americans continued, but it became increasingly violent. The struggle produced angry, bitter memories. Yet it also produced some of the greatest words spoken in American history.
When we allow freedom to ring, when we let it ring from every village and every hamlet, from every state and every city, we will be able to speed up that day when all of God's children, black men and white men, Jews and Gentiles, Protestants and Catholics, will be able to join hands and sing in the words of the old Negro spiritual, free at last, free at last. Thank God Almighty, we are free at last.
And that is our program for today. Thank you for listening. Join us again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Ana Mateo.